News about our current pandemic is moving fast with new numbers out every day and a lot of talk about potential treatments and where we stand on containing the novel coronavirus. We've been having regular check-ins here on Central Time with doctors and public health experts for a look at the latest information and misinformation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about COVID-19 symptoms and treatment, how the novel coronavirus spreads, or the response from hospitals and labs? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. John Ohoro is an infectious disease specialist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester. He also works at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse and is a graduate of the University of Wisconsin and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Ohoro, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with testing, a major point of concern in getting a handle on this outbreak. What kind of progress are we seeing in the availability of tests and our capacity to administer and then process them?
Sure. Testing capacity is really ramping up nationwide and in Wisconsin in particular. And we're starting to see some of the benefits from that just in terms of the case numbers that are being reported in the past several days. There's been more testing, and although the cases are up, a lot of that reflects the fact that we're now able to test more cases. As of yet, we would like to see the testing capacity nationwide and in every state really improve even further yet. The more we can test people, the more we can isolate cases and prevent further spread. But having said that, it has been moving in a positive direction over the past few days to week.
Are we getting close to a point where we can be testing more people who are asymptomatic to see if they have the virus, even though they're not showing signs of it, or people who are kind of borderline cases, so we can get from that broad brush, everybody stay home policy to a place where we can say, okay, things are closer to normal, and then we can find the people who have it and have them stay home?
We're getting closer to that, but I wouldn't say that we're quite close to it at this point. The more testing capacity we have, the more discretion we have to use it in cases where the suspicion may be a little bit higher, even though they don't meet traditional risk factors, like testing someone who has a close contact with a known case, for example, who might not be exhibiting typical symptoms. And we are able to test more of those patients now than we were a month ago or even 2 weeks ago. But we're not yet at the point where we can start doing any kind of blanket testing. We still have to apply a great deal of discretion to make sure we're using this test appropriately and in the patients who we have the highest suspicion of infection.
Now, something that's come up in the last few days, and I know health departments are getting calls about this. The president had brought up the possibility of apparently testing the use of disinfectant inside the body as a way to get rid of coronavirus. And he said after it, he'd been sarcastic, but to be clear, internal use of the things we're using to disinfect, packaging or tables or whatever, we don't want to do that, right?
There is no medical role for ingesting any sort of household cleaner or bleach product or anything similar, or ammonia product, anything similar to that. None of those will have any benefit in terms of trying to clear an infection of COVID or any other kind of benefit. And as of right now, the same goes for any kind of UV or light therapy in that same vein. There's not a light therapy, which also had been discussed in that same sort of vein. Both of those are very effective tools for cleaning the environment and are used extensively in hospitals and in other areas to prevent spread from virus that's sticking around on surfaces. But they're very toxic to viruses, and that's how they work, and they're very toxic to us as well. And ideally, we pick treatments that are less toxic to us than they are to the virus.
And we've seen cases. I know there was a problem in Iran, for example, with people seeking out a bootleg alcohol, not safe for human consumption type stuff, and having deaths because of that. So can you talk about the importance of getting that message out? Drinking anything really isn't going to kill this virus. Drinking stuff that's bad for you obviously is bad for you. Just, do you want to hammer that home a wee bit more?
Absolutely. There is, as of yet, no known cure or preventive thing that you can take or ingest that will really help clear COVID or prevent COVID. There's plenty of areas of research for that, but within that, there is no role for any of these sort of toxic treatments, none of these household cleansers, none of the home-brewed, high-concentration alcohol. Those things are poisonous, and they will remain poisonous well after COVID.
And just briefly, I've heard of cases of people having rashes from using these products. And again, and in this case, I think not intentionally putting them on people's hands or faces to try to kill the virus, but just while cleaning with these things, not taking enough precautions. These aren't even all that safe for external use on humans, right?
Well, that all depends on which product we're talking about, and it's always important to review the manufacturer's instructions. Some require gloves in order to wipe down if you're talking about some certain hospital-grade disinfectants. Some of them are very generic ones that are used on surfaces in households. They're all equally important to read those instructions. Some are more toxic than others and ingested, but none of them should be ingested, whether we're talking about a mild household cleanser or a hospital-grade bleach.
Talking to Dr. John Ohoro from the Mayo Clinic, taking your questions now about COVID-19 and the novel coronavirus that causes that illness. Let's go to Mary Kay. Nope, looks like we're losing Mary Kay. Let's go to Tom in Milwaukee. Hi, Tom.
I'd like to know a little bit more about the mechanism that makes people with high blood pressure more vulnerable to complications, and does it depend on how high the blood pressure is or if one's taking medication?
Sure. There's a lot of interesting associations that we're starting to understand a little bit better about COVID-19 and who does better with it, and more importantly, who's at higher risk for a poor outcome. One of the groups that we've found that is at higher risk is patients who have any kind of cardiovascular disease. Part of this might be because having any kind of cardiac disease, whether it's from high blood pressure or heart disease, just makes it so you have less reserve, less ability for your body to cope with a severe infection. But there's also some evidence that COVID may actually directly infect heart tissue in some people. So for someone who has high blood pressure, there is some increased risk of their heart just not being able to keep up with that kind of strain. Interestingly, there are some blood pressure medications that are also being looked at for protective effect, but none of those are yet anywhere near definite enough for them to be recommended to be started for someone who's not already on them. But overall, this seems to be just a marker for heart disease, and that's our current understanding of that association.
Thanks for that call. Let's go to Mary Kay now in Kenosha. My mistake, Mary Kay. You've been there the whole time. Hi.
I'd like to ask a few questions. The first one is the masks. If we were to have a regional mandatory mask in public and start manufacturing ones you only wear in public, like when you're going to the grocery store or going to work, wouldn't that, until there's a cure, wouldn't that help a lot? That's the first thing.
Sure. The masking, the role of masking is important right now, but it's important to understand what the masks that are generally being used in the public are really good for. The cloth masks that most people are wearing and should be wearing right now are really to limit the spread of any coughs or sneezes and prevent us from touching our own face before we touch anything else. So what they really do is protect the rest of the world from us. It's something that you should wear out of consideration for others, as opposed to the kind of higher grade filtering masks that are worn in some of the procedural areas of the hospital, or even the surgical masks that are intended to provide true protection to healthcare staff. So having said that, there is a lot of value to wearing those masks because it does help limit some of the potential for spread by containing your coughs and sneezes to yourself. So if you are early on in the illness and you don't know it, you have less potential of spreading it to others. It's an adjunct to, but not a replacement for, some of the social distancing measures. It's important to wear them when social distancing is a little bit more relaxed. But because these aren't perfect filters, they aren't going to reach the point right now, at least, where we can say that it's going to be a substitute for avoiding avoiding mass gatherings and such.
Thanks for that call, Mary Kay. I've got a note. Mary Kay also is wondering if vinegar was an effective substance for cleaning surfaces to try to make sure the virus wasn't living on them.
It wouldn't be my preferred substance for it. I would honestly have to look up what the concentration of vinegar that would be effective as a cleaner is, but I don't know that offhand, but I suspect it's higher than anyone would really be comfortable handling or using in their household routinely. There are some acetic acid washes that can be used in certain settings, but it's not the typical household vinegar concentration.
We continue our talk with Dr. John Ohoro, infectious disease specialist at Mayo Clinic, who's answering your coronavirus questions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you have a question about what we know about the disease and how it spreads, what kind of treatment might be on the horizon, anything about testing, 800-642-1234 is the number. Back to your calls now. Stan is with us in Green Bay. Stan, hello.
Yeah, hi. I just heard on the news that 75% of the patients on ventilators are men, and that 80 to 90% of the actual fatalities are men. And I'm wondering why the doctor thinks that is, and if there's something protecting women, if there's something that we can do to, you know, lower the fatality rate.
Stan, thanks for the call. I haven't seen those specific numbers, Dr. Ohoro, but I have seen references that men seem to be more prone to this.
Yes, that definitely is true, and that's an association that, as of yet, is not really well understood. We've seen that very consistently going across the reports coming out of China and Europe and throughout Asia and now in the U.S. that men do seem to be at higher risk for more severe disease and higher risk for mortality, and the exact nature of why that might be is really anybody's guess at this point. It's going to be a fruitful area of research for some time, but I don't have a satisfying answer.
Thanks a lot for that call. We got an email from Pat who says their 28-year-old son had symptoms back in the middle of March after riding a train, testing not available to people at the time. He's since recovered. He didn't call his provider at the time. Should they ask him, the question is, to get tested now that he has recovered? Would there be any benefit in that?
Sure. So there's a couple of potential roles for testing after disease at this point. Mostly it's not indicated for routine purposes, but there is concern that people may start shedding virus once their symptoms have resolved if they have any kind of immune compromising condition and it's still relatively recent after their course of illness. So for some patients, even when their symptoms are resolved, we still are testing them with the nasal swab to look for any kind of virus. That's a very small group of patients. Now, the other test, which is probably the one that they're more interested in this case, is the serology test, where we look for an antibody indicating that the immune system has had a response to COVID, and that would confirm that that is indeed what that illness was at that point. There isn't much to do with that information right now on an individual case level. That we don't know for sure right now if that test indicates that somebody's actually immune or just that they've merely been exposed. There's plenty of diseases where we have tests that show exposure on these antibodies without actually conferring a long-term immunity or protection to this. But there are some emerging studies coming out now that are doing some treatments with convalescent plasma, meaning that they tried to take the blood of people who have recovered from infection, distill it down to the antibody component, and administer to some ill individuals. Mayo and several other large institutions have trials along these lines and are doing that kind of testing. But outside of those sort of trial settings, it's somewhat questionable if there's a reason to do that kind of test right now. So overall, I'd say there's not any great indication to do that, but as for a general healthy 28-year-old, but there are plenty of specific scenarios where a doctor would be a very appropriate to recommend testing for one of these research studies.
Time for one more caller. Mike is with us in Milwaukee. Mike, hi.
Hello. I just wanted to also add to wearing the cloth mask. Beyond sneezing and coughing, doesn't it also help just if a person's talking, they tend to sometimes spit a little bit, any water droplets and things like that?
Yes, there is benefit to the masks just beyond the coughing and sneezing. That is the most visible part of that. But we've all met people who spit when they talk, and catching some of that certainly has some benefit. But probably the most significant benefits we get from the masking is a constant reminder to not touch our face. A lot of things are transmitted from us touching things, not cleaning our hands before we touch our face, and then infecting ourselves that way, or taking virus away from our face and touching other surfaces that other people touch. It also acts as something of a constant reminder to keep that social distance between you and the next person if you're wearing that mask. So the benefits go beyond just the cough or sneeze. For sure, those are just some of the more visible benefits of it.
Thanks for that call. And just our last minute or so, Dr. Ohoro, I know you worry in general about passing diseases on in healthcare settings. Can you talk about the precautions briefly that we're taking for COVID-19 in healthcare settings?
Sure. So in healthcare settings now, we're doing a lot more testing because of that increased testing availability to try to make sure we know among patients who are in the hospital who's at the highest risk for transmitting disease to minimize the chances of transmission within the hospital. That also includes more aggressive testing of healthcare workers who have compatible symptoms. But beyond that, there's a more aggressive approach to wearing masks for healthcare providers so that there's less of a chance of us acting as a potential route of transmission, and using more personal protective equipment in the form of those surgical-grade masks, gowns, gloves for suspected cases to just not track virus out of that room. Between having a better idea of which cases we need to be the most cautious with and having a higher index of suspicion and a higher grade of protection than we normally would before COVID, these measures seem to do a reasonable job of mitigating that risk of spread within hospital settings. And it's important to know that hospitals really are not the hot spot at the moment, because something that's been more and more evident across the nation is that people are avoiding going to the hospital when they need it. There have been increased incidences of people waiting for when they have appendicitis and other severe illnesses before they go to the ER. And that has, in some areas, the risk of people waiting to go to the ER or not going to the ER where they need to has led to more deaths and more poor outcomes than COVID in those same areas.
So we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Dr. John Ohoro, infectious disease specialist at Mayo Clinic, with us to answer questions about COVID-19.